Monday morning you showed up fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another edition of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to recap the NFL draft that took place over the weekend, wrapping up Saturday evening around 7:38, just in time to watch the Canadiens and Bruins game. Actually, a little overlap there, but we're going to keep it brief today on the show. I kept you way too long last time, so I promised to get you out of here in about a half hour or so. So we're going to go right into the stuff now, and we're going to start with my top seven storylines from the NFL draft. I'm going to just name the seven biggest things that happened. Some of them may be surprising. Some of them weren't surprising, but were big tidbits of news. Number one overall pick, not a huge surprise here. Jadeveon Clowney going number one overall to the Houston Texans. Now, I say it's not surprising. A lot of people thought maybe the Houston Texans should go with a quarterback number one, or maybe even trade back to out of the top five or out of the top 10, whatever, stay in the top 10 and take a quarterback later on and get more picks. I believed it was the right move to get Clowney. I'm not a huge fan of Mel Kiper or Todd McShay and their rankings and whatnot, but I really believe that Clowney is a special, special talent, and for Houston to pass on him would have been a huge mistake. So that was the correct decision in taking him number one overall. A little bit surprising, though, Houston did not take a quarterback until Tom Savage out of Pittsburgh in the fourth round. Now, we're going to get into a situation in a little bit. Actually, one of my other top storylines about another quarterback taken very late in the first round with that last overall pick. Now, it's all speculation at this point. Maybe the Texans would have taken that quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater, at number 33 if he had not been gone at number 32, taken by the Minnesota Vikings. So we'll never know if that is the case or not. I thought that perhaps the Texans would have gone with a quarterback at number 33. They passed on several guys like Jimmy Garoppolo from Eastern Illinois. A.J. McCarron was still there. He was there for a very long time, and including Tom Savage as well. They did not take a quarterback at number three, did not take a quarterback in the third round either, waited all the way to the fourth round. Now, there was a rumor circling around on Friday night that Houston was in the works with the New England Patriots in a deal trying to get Ryan Mallett from the Patriots after they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo out of Eastern Illinois, which we're going to talk about him later as well. That would have made a lot of sense. And Adam Schefter basically reported it as just a rumor. It was a deal that was never going to happen. Didn't end up happening, so he was correct so far anyway. And it did not happen over the weekend. That would have made a lot of sense if it did, though, because Houston in need of a quarterback, obviously. They don't really have one on their roster. I mean, the guys they have are Case Keenum, T.J. Yates, and now they throw Tom Savage into the mix. Not exactly quarterbacks that blow up your skirt. So, yes, great pick in Clowney. A little bit surprising that they didn't take a quarterback a little bit earlier than the fourth round. Second storyline that I kept my eyes on over the NFL draft, and I mean, how could you not? Because ESPN completely blowing the story out of proportion. Johnny Manziel taking number 22 to the Cleveland Browns. Browns trading up from number 26 to that number 22 spot to get him. Now, the Browns have done this before. They traded up to get Brady Quinn at number 22, and they actually took, just 2 years ago, Brandon Weeden at number 22. So Cleveland fans hoping that Manziel turns out better than Brady Quinn and Brandon Weeden. But I liked the pick a lot. I don't want to say I'm surprised that Manziel didn't go in the top 10. Now, I wouldn't have disagreed with a team if they took him in the top 10. I would have said it was a fine pick. Taking him at number 22 is tremendous value, and he's going to be a great player in this league. I really, really do believe that. Now, the question really is about Manziel. Oh, there's a lot of questions, I guess. But the one question that kept coming up over the weekend, will he be able to stay healthy? What will happen when he takes his first NFL hit? He's pretty small. Look, I looked up his size compared to Russell Wilson. Manziel stands 6'1 and weighs in at 209, according to Google. And Russell Wilson, according to Wikipedia, 5'11, 206. So, yeah, maybe Wilson has a little bit more muscle, a little bit more bulk on him because he's 2 inches shorter and the same weight. But the point is, they are about the same size, and we all know what Russell Wilson just did last year. Yes, he's on a great team, but one of the weaknesses of the Seattle Seahawks actually is their offensive line, and he was able to scramble around and still make plays for them. I see Manziel doing the same thing. Now, I would compare Manziel to Russell Wilson. Other NFL fans and experts that I talked to over the weekend compare Manziel to a RG3 type. And we all know what's going on with him. The same exact year that we saw Wilson go on and, you know, maybe set a new precedent for how quarterbacks can play and win in the NFL. Well, we saw a guy that set a new precedent taking his team to the playoffs the year prior be completely ineffective and, quite frankly, still injured from his ACL and knee injury from 2012. So that is the big question mark for me. And you know what? I'd love to hear from the listeners out there. You can tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. You can also email me, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. The question of the day, is it a better comparison to compare Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, to Russell Wilson, or is it a better comparison between him and RG3? We're going to get back to the Browns later on. They did a lot of wheeling and dealing in this draft. Actually, you know what? Let's just go with them now so we won't come back to them later. They took Justin Gilbert at number 9 overall, traded back from number 4 to pick up another first-round pick, and that is what everyone is missing out in this Cleveland Browns palooza over the weekend. Yes, they got Johnny Manziel. Yes, they got maybe the best cornerback in the draft. They also got a second first-round pick next year from the Buffalo Bills, who honestly probably going to be in the top 10 again next year, and they will not have their top pick. It'll be going to Cleveland. I mentioned Teddy Bridgewater at the top with the Texans and them taking Clowney, but not taking a quarterback. Top storyline here, Minnesota trading back into the first round at number 32, the last pick, making a trade with the Seattle Seahawks to move up and get the Louisville quarterback. Great move. He's a good fit in Minnesota. You pair him up with a dynamic running back like Adrian Peterson. Their defense, you know, they've lost pieces. They don't have Jared Allen anymore, who's getting older anyway. So they still have some building to do, but that is another team that looks like they've found their franchise quarterback. Arguably the biggest story of the NFL draft. Now, you know, Johnny Manziel got a lot of headlines on day 3 on Saturday, especially towards the end where a lot of names are being picked that even diehard NFL fans have never heard of. All the talk was about Michael Sam and him being the first openly gay NFL player to be drafted. And you know what? I send my congratulations out to Michael Sam. I'm sure he doesn't listen to this show, but if he did, or if he is listening to this episode, congratulations to him. Going number 249 in the 7th round to the St. Louis Rams. A excellent fit. Everyone's been talking about that, that he's going to the Rams. You know, it's not a huge media market, which he won't get a lot of attention and an extra pressure to make the team. And he's that's his home state. I mean, he played college at Missouri, so it's right down the road from him. And Jeff Fisher, I respected him before this, and I still think he got unfairly treated at the end of his career or end of his tenure at Tennessee, the way that ended with their owner and Vince Young. He left at the end of that year too, but Jeff Fisher leaving, or maybe he got fired. I forget which one it was, but kind of definitely unfairly treated there. I got a whole new level of respect for him over the weekend. During that interview with Susie Colberg of ESPN on Saturday night, he went through the call that he talked about with Michael Sam and was just, you know, I don't even know what words to really use for him, but there are a lot of coaches. There might have been 31 other coaches. I mean, who knows, that didn't want Michael Sam, didn't want the distraction, didn't want to deal with the distraction of pulling on or drafting the first openly gay NFL player. And the reason why I believe it is the number one story in this draft, even though I did rank it number four, it still is a top story because it's history. This has never happened before, and it's, in a way, it's breaking the color barrier. It's not at the same level as Jackie Robinson, but it is still a huge story. And I just want to say one other thing on this topic. I was watching the NFL draft at work on Saturday night. I at least had it on in the background while I was working, quote unquote. And the draft was on, and when Michael Sam goes and kisses his boyfriend for after he got drafted, and the reaction, there wasn't a huge reaction on Twitter. I saw some reaction on Twitter, but just overall, people in the office and people online reacting to that and saying that, you know, that some people were saying it was very cool, and other people were saying that it was inappropriate. ESPN shouldn't be showing it. They were weirded out by it. And look, I don't want to get too much into discussing politics here or human rights or whatever. Everybody's entitled to their own beliefs. But, you know, in saying that, so is Michael Sam. Michael Sam is entitled to his own beliefs and is entitled to his own freedoms. And you know what? As controversial as it might be, and as grossed out as some real manly men may be by seeing that on TV, that was really great to see. It groundbreaking, really. History in the making. And like I said, I just got so much respect for Jeff Fisher because he didn't shy away from the moment or the history. He was honored to be a part of it. That was a quote that he said, and it something that was very important for to happen, because if it didn't happen, I mean, what's the backlash in that? I mean, what would we be talking about, on ESPN, and me and everybody else be talking about how maybe the NFL is just not ready for an openly gay player? And that obviously not the case. Getting back to actual football, a running back was not taken until the 54th pick, 22nd overall in the second round. Now, it was a running back that was kind of surprising to me, Bishop Shankey out of Washington. So it continues to be a storyline in drafts where running backs take a back seat to every single other position. This was the first running back has ever gone in the NFL draft. Last year, they went pretty late at number 37, being the first overall running back. That was Giovanni Bernard to Cincinnati. So every single year, they seem to lose value and lose stock. And you know what? I'm waiting for the years where we start to see wide receivers lose stock, because we talked about last week, and I know there's a lot of people that disagree with me, but wide receivers just shouldn't be getting so much attention at the top of drafts because they don't overall help your team out. Now, running backs, honestly, are more valuable than wide receivers. It's just the shelf life on running backs are just so short. Plus, the money that you pay them you would rather pay second round money or third round money than top dollar when they're tapped out or peaking by the age of 27, 28, they're on the downhill of their career. So we'll continue to monitor that in years to come. There were some good running backs in this draft, I believe. Carlos Hyde going to San Francisco. We're going to talk about him later, actually. Trey Mason going to St. Louis was a big pick, even though they had some running backs and drafted one last year. I thought that was a great pickup. So there's running back value to be had. And in many ways, you know, if you need a running back, it's actually helpful that these running backs aren't going early on, because you can take one position in the first round and then wait to the second or even the third round to take a top five running back available in the draft. So in that way, it's actually a positive. I got two more storylines here, and then we're going to take a break. Pairing two more quarterbacks together, you always talk about the quarterbacks when talking about an NFL draft. Aaron Murray and A.J. McCarron both had tremendous success at Georgia and Alabama, respectively, in the SEC. Both of them going pretty late in this draft. Murray going to Kansas City and McCarron going to Cincinnati, actually in back-to-back picks in the fifth round. It was surprising to me to see Murray go before A.J. McCarron. And look, I'm not an NFL scout. I'm not a draft expert, but I was just so surprised to see McCarron stay on the draft board so long into the fifth round. It's a guy that won national championships, plural. And I get that he was surrounded by tremendous talent at Alabama, but you put him on another talented team in the NFL, I'm not saying he could lead the Jaguars back to prominence or to prominence. I don't know if the Jaguars have ever had prominence. They've been to a couple championship games, but that wouldn't be likely. I wouldn't like that situation for McCarron on a team like the Jaguars, who needs a lot of help. But if you put him on a team like Cincinnati, no, he's not going to start this year, but if he somewhere down the road he gets some starting time because of an injury to Dalton or whatever, I really believe he could have some success. So that was a good landing spot for him, even though he had to wait a very long time. And, you know, it begs to wonder, what is Cincinnati thinking about Andy Dalton now? There was a lot of controversy, and we talked about it on this show, actually. You know, what to do with Dalton? And he's now 0-3 in the playoffs, and some of that his fault, some of it not his fault, so not really fair to completely blame him. But three straight playoff appearances hasn't happened, I don't think, ever for Cincinnati in the franchise's history. And you know, that's a tremendous amount of regular season success, but not a playoff win yet. So is the leash a little bit shorter on on Andy Dalton? Maybe, I don't know. McCarron did go in the fifth round, so not exactly very early in the draft. Now, Andy Dalton wasn't an early NFL pick either, but he went in the second round, not the fifth. So, well, I'm very curious to see how that continues to develop. And for Aaron Murray, is he the heir apparent to Alex Smith? I don't know. Smith is only 30 years old. He was in his first year with Kansas City, had maybe his best season as a pro under Andy Reid. So he had a lot of success. He looks like he will continue to build upon that success. And maybe Murray is just kind of Andy Reid's project. Reid is a quarterback's coach, and he did a tremendous job with Alex Smith, and Smith was a developing project under Jim Harbaugh, and he continued to develop with him and then under Reid last year. So Murray is kind of that next NFL or quarterback project for Andy Reid, and again, he had a lot of success in the SEC, so he could be fully capable of developing if given the right situation, and very well could be under Andy Reid. A couple other quarterbacks that I want to get to, and then we will get to our last story before our break. Derek Carr going in the second round, the fourth pick of that round, to the Oakland Raiders. that is a interesting pick. Someone that I really thought the Texans would look hard at number 33, but he did not go at 33 and went 36 to the Oakland Raiders. So that's another situation where Carr can sit back and develop because, remember, Oakland has Matt Schaub, who is probably going to start at the beginning of next year. Logan Thomas out of Virginia Tech went to the Arizona Cardinals. We talked about them last week possibly taking a quarterback. They did not take one early, but they did take Thomas in the fourth round. Again, another development project because Carson Palmer is the immediate starter for Arizona. Interesting that he was taken before McCarron and Murray, something that not everyone really expected. Last quarterback I want to mention here, Taj Boyd out of Clemson, going to the New York Jets. Now, the Jets have three quarterbacks that probably prefer to run than throw in Geno Smith, Michael Vick, and now Taj Boyd. And look, the Jets were trying to add weapons, and they didn't have a terrible draft. I mean, it was a pretty good draft. They were able to do some nice things. I just am curious by this Taj Boyd pick. They have two other quarterbacks, and the Jets, you know, the biggest issue with the Jets, no matter what they do at this point, they're a circus. And I've said this on the show for 2 years now. They are the circus of the NFL, and no matter what they do, it is really under the microscope by ESPN and everyone else. Part of that was Tim Tebow. Part of that was Mark Sanchez and how high he went in the NFL draft. But they don't need any extra drama. And Geno Smith was a little bit of drama last year. Now they're bringing in a Michael Vick. So they already brought in a Michael Vick. Now they're bringing in Taj Boyd. It's just who's going to start? Who is the future? I mean, just are they giving up on Geno Smith? They're not going to give up on him. But what does it say about him that they took a quarterback? I don't care it's in the sixth round. What does it say about Geno Smith that the Jets are taking a quarterback at all? Begs to differ, really does. The last bit of news has nothing to do with an NFL team, but the Texas Longhorns did not have a player selected in the NFL draft over the weekend for the first time since 1937. That was the second ever NFL draft. So what is that, like 70 years? 80 years. More than 70 years. So between 70 and 80 years. I'm not great at math. So just an incredible stat there. I saw on Twitter, actually, that somebody posted openly gay athletes drafted in the NFL over the weekend, 1. Texas Longhorns, 0. That was pretty funny. But I guess that just speaks to how poor that program in Texas has gotten over the last few years. But they're going to try and turn it around under their new head coach. But we're going to take a break here on the show. We're already at 23 minutes, so we're going to take a very quick break and come back. And we're going to have a segment called Boom or Bust after this break. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. That was Huey Lewis and the News from their album 4 in 1986. I got to see Huey and the News in March, so great, great performance. Definitely recommend to see them if you're a fan or a fan of good music. But we got to keep moving on with the show, but don't forget, I want to hear what you think. Tweet at me, DMHOLCOMB. You can also email me, holcombmdavid@gmail.com, and you can find us on Facebook. Search Dave's Football News. Now, we have the segment we're coming up here. It's called Boom or Bust. We're kind of doing this instead of fourth and long segment, which we'll bring back in a few weeks. But I got 10 names, and I'm either going to call them a boom or a bust. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to be a good player in the league. All it means is I don't like the pick, or I do think he's going to be a bust, or if I do indeed call him a bust, that's what it means. Boom, that means he's going to be a fantastic player, or he was good value, something along those lines. So number one, we're going to go with wide receiver Sammy Watkins. Now, I mentioned we were going to bring up the Buffalo Bills when I was talking about the Cleveland Browns. Now, Buffalo traded from number 9 up to 4 and gave up their number 1 pick next year to get Sammy Watkins. Now, the issue I have with this is, you know, taking a wide receiver in the first round when you have so many other needs. That's number one. Number two, giving up your first round pick next year so you can get the talent of Watkins. Yeah, we've seen that work out before. The Falcons traded up to get Julio Jones 3 years ago, and Jones is a great talent. Can you honestly tell me that Watkins is the next Julio Jones? I don't know. So I'm actually going to put that pick, not necessarily Watkins, but that pick into my bust category. I don't like giving up next year's number one pick to take Watkins. Now, real quickly, I do want to go back to the Browns for a second. Over the weekend, it came out. Now, this is not an official report. This is an outside the lines report. So there's no true reporting to this story yet, but there is a very... It's very likely that Josh Gordon is going to be suspended for the season for substance abuse, smoking marijuana. And the Cleveland Browns' second wide receiver, Nate Burleson, fractured his arm. So all of a sudden, what looked like a fantastic weekend for the Cleveland Browns, taking a top corner to pair with Joe Hayden, getting their franchise quarterback, getting a lot of other pieces late, they did not take a wide receiver. And Gilbert is a great player. I liked the pick at number 9. But wouldn't it have been fantastic for the Browns to take Sammy Watkins at number 4 and then Johnny Manziel at 22? Maybe they didn't know Manziel was going to fall to them at 22. But if that was what they were planning, look, they had to be a little bit more proactive in my mind. Getting a wide receiver. And they had a chance to get Watkins. And if you really believe that he is the top guy, you know, a guy that could be a Julio Jones type, then that's probably a miss for Cleveland. Again, I love the fact that they have a number one pick next year. Maybe they get a Sammy Watkins type next year. Who knows? Or some other piece to help Johnny Manziel or their team. But the fact that Manziel now has no receivers to throw to because the top two guys, one probably out on a suspension, the other one injured, going to miss a good portion of the season, really hurts Cleveland. And they knew about this. They knew about this going into the draft. And they did not address the wide receiver position. That, to me, is another bust. But moving on, my players list. And by the way, I got most of these players, I believe 8 out of the 10 that I'm going to mention, from two articles on footballnation.com that you should check out. Number one is titled 2014 NFL Draft 10 Picks Destined for Epic Fail. So I guess I got most of my busts on that list, although I disagreed on a couple of them. That is by David Levin, so definitely check that out. Dave is a top contributor on Football Nation. And this one is from Ryan Hudson. Almost the same title, same beginning anyway. 2014 NFL Draft, top 10 most shocking picks. So he has 10 picks that surprised him. Those are two of my favorite pieces on the site right now. So moving on my list, number two, Louis Nix III out of Notre Dame, the nose tackle. Big boom here, taken by Houston. We talked about the Texans not taking a quarterback. Well, they're really bulking up that defensive line. So getting Clowney at number one overall, and then Nix, who possibly could have been a top first round pick, a top half first round pick, and him falling to the Texans in the third round really great value and maybe sets up the Texans on their defensive line for, you know, years to come, maybe a decade, depending on if Clowney plays outside linebacker or defensive end. But definitely a great pick there. Number three, Odell Beckham Jr., the wide receiver out of LSU, went to the New York Giants at number 12. I'm putting him in at bust. He's a talented receiver, but he was the third one taken in the top 12 picks. I know that Eli Manning needs some help, but he still has Victor Cruz. And what does this say about Reuben Randall? Are Giants fans or the Giants organization already giving up on Randall? Who, the reason why you let Nix walk, Hakeem Nix, that is because you thought Randall could step in and be that number two. Now you spent a pick on a top wide receiver. Maybe he's a top talent, but the Giants needed other positions as well. It's not like a wide receiver is going to make this a playoff team. Number four, Carlos Hyde, running back from Ohio State. I mentioned him before. I'm going boom. The article I found him in, Ryan's article, Ryan Hudson's, on footballnation.com, talks about the depth and crowded backfield for San Francisco now with Hyde, and they also have running back that hasn't played yet, Marcus Lattimore, who was recovering from that awful injury. Look, it's never a bad thing to have a lot of running backs. And Frank Gore, at some point, we've been saying this for years now, but at some point, he's got to stop being the workhorse and let somebody else take a majority of the carries. And maybe it's Hyde. Hyde really gives them a power back as well. I really liked this pick. Next is Kelvin Benjamin, wide receiver that went to Carolina late in the first round. I'm going bust. I didn't understand why Carolina took this pick when Marquise Lee was still on the board. And there were other wide receivers that scouts and draft experts were saying were better. I mean, Marquise Lee, who is going to be on this list, I believe. No, he's not on this list. Anyway, Marquise Lee was a guy that was a top wide receiver, the best wide receiver in the country in 2012. Didn't have a great 2013 season, but look, it was a tough situation for him without Matt Barkley. USC just didn't have a great season. I mean, their head coach got fired. There were changes there. I don't mean to make excuses for him, but for him to fall as late as he did to Jacksonville was a pretty big deal. So I didn't understand why Benjamin was taken before him. And overall, Carolina did not have a very good draft. I'm going by the draft experts again. So that really, that first round pick kind of set the tone for them for the rest of the weekend. Number six on this list, Dry Archer, running back out of Kent Place. I got this guy off of David Levin's list. Now, Levin lists him as a wide receiver, but everywhere else I've seen him, he's listed as a running back. Now, he did play some wide receiver, lines up in the slot. He's a real specialty type player, and the Steelers took a running back similar to this, similar in size, similar in skill, 2 years ago with Chris Rainey, and that did not work out at all. But that was mostly because Rainey had off-the-field issues, got arrested, and the team released him. So Archer, it probably would have been better for him, to be honest, to go to a team like the Saints, a team that can utilize this guy out of the backfield, catching passes. The Steelers don't throw to their running backs all that much, and they like power backs. I don't really know where they're going to get carries for this guy, because they just signed LeGarrette Blount, who is a great change-up, to Le'Veon Bell, who's also a power back but has a little bit more speed than Blount, who just tries to run through you. Yes, Archer is definitely a different type of running back, but will he really be a running back for them? He probably will fill more of a punt returner, kick returner, and play that fifth wide receiver type of role. So we'll see. Right now I'm putting him in the bust category. He was taken a little early at third round, but there is a lot of potential there. He has a lot of skill. The question is, will he hold up with his size? Number seven, we mentioned him before, Jimmy Garoppolo, Eastern Illinois quarterback going to New England. Not saying that Garoppolo is not going to be a good quarterback, but I'm putting him in the bust category because the guy was taken in the second round by the Patriots, who are trying to get back to the Super Bowl with Tom Brady as their quarterback, who's 37. We saw all the things that the Denver Broncos did in free agency to try to help them get back to the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, who's 38. Tom Brady a year younger, but last year it was the Patriots and Broncos really were the two clear-cut top teams in the AFC. Now, I don't think either one of them, obviously Denver didn't have a chance against Seattle. New England wouldn't have either. But the point is, these are the two teams, and it's been that way for a decade, with a few exceptions, the Ravens and the Steelers. It's been this way for a decade that these two quarterbacks, that the teams that they're on, have competed with each other to go to the Super Bowl. And that's the way it's going to be until these two guys retire. Manning's team did an excellent job of putting him in a situation where he can get back to the Super Bowl this year or next year. And that window is really two years wide. Brady and the Patriots, I can't say the same thing. They did not do very much to help out their quarterback and their team get better on draft weekend and get to a point where they are going to compete with the Denver Broncos again next year. They're drafting for the future, and that's great. I mean, in many ways, the Broncos are setting themselves up for a real downfall when Manning retires and all these guys that they just signed leave, or they run into salary cap issues. So New England in the long run, yes, they are better suited for the long run. But the time is now for Tom Brady, and the time is now for this team. Jimmy Garoppolo does nothing for next year's team. That's why he's a bust. I misspoke before. Marquise Lee is on this list. Well, at least I'm going to discuss him with Jacksonville, who took him in the second round. Jacksonville also took quarterback Blake Bortles at number three overall. Initially, I called him a bust. Now, last week on the show, I was very critical of Blake and the, you know, his ability to play in at the NFL level. Now, pairing him with Marquise Lee, I'm putting this in the boom category. I like it a lot. And if at any point they get back Justin Blackmon and they can pair Blackmon with Lee, although that might be a sailed ship. But anyway, with Lee, Broitels can be a star. Now, I still have my doubts about him, but at least Jacksonville is surrounding him with pieces for him to be successful. Number nine on this list, Kyle Fuller. Definitely a boom. These last couple are booms. I went with the busts early on in this list. So Fuller, a boom, was taken at number 14 by the Chicago Bears. They are trying to restack that defense that really was bad last year. They did a lot of stuff to that defensive line, signing some players, Justin Houston, Jared Allen. So the immediate need, although they did need defensive line, and they addressed that later in the draft by taking, I believe his name is Ferguson Egon, I think that's how you pronounce it. But in the first round, they took a corner, which was their most pressing need in Kyle Fuller. And at the time, was the best corner available, really fits their scheme, and he's going to fit right in with the Chicago Bears. The last player I'm going to discuss here, Zach Martin, offensive tackle out of Notre Dame, circling back to Johnny Manziel, because the Dallas Cowboys, at least it was reported, they were thinking about taking Johnny Manziel at number 16, which would have been a big mistake. Look, Manziel's going to be a good player. I really believe that. But for the Cowboys to take him and Tony Romo with his huge contract, it just would have been a disaster, a circus. Talk about circuses with the New York Jets. That would have been a circus. They went with the safe pick, a pick that can help Tony Romo out, get him some more protection, and then later on in the draft, they went defense. They had actually five picks in the last round, and they went defense with a lot of those picks. Not that the seventh rounders are going to make a big impact on the team, but they got some defensive players later on in the draft, which was another team, talking about the Bears needing defense, the Cowboys definitely needed defense as well. That does it for the boom bust segment. We're going to take a break. Here's another one from Huey Lewis and the News. And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Love to hear from the audience out there. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. You could send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. You could also follow me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. Here in this third segment, we're going to keep it brief. We're already at 40 minutes here on the show. Going to just name one team that I thought did the best, and I'm using a lot of help from what I read online, because I am not a draft expert. I've said that on the show last week and this week, so I tried to not pretend to be one, although I, you know, these last two episodes have just are an attempt to further the draft discussion, which I would love to have. Just send me an email or a tweet, and we can discuss the details of the NFL draft, or even I'll put your tweet on the show and even talk about something that you want me to address next time. But from what I've gathered and read, the team that had the best draft, the St. Louis Rams. And you talk about great drafting teams, the San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks in the last 3 or 4 years really come to mind. And they had great drafts again over this weekend. But the St. Louis Rams really stuck out. Obviously, it helps when you have two picks in the top 13. But taking the tackle that they did in the first round, that was Greg Robinson out of Auburn. And then at number 13, they took Aaron Donald, defensive tackle out of Pittsburgh. So they're working on that offensive and defensive line. Football is still one in the trenches. So that was a great pickup for both of them. Mentioned Trey Mason briefly. They got him. I know some people are saying that they didn't need him in the third round because they've had backs, running backs taken in the last few rounds. Well, the criticism that they sent them was they didn't take a wide receiver. Well, they took Tavon Austin in the first round last year, and they also took Brian Quick, who I'm not sure if he's on the team or not, but they took him at the very beginning of the second round 2 years ago. So, you know, wide receiver isn't exactly they've taken a lot of wide receivers lately too, even if it's a need. So I don't mind them taking a Trey Mason, a guy that, you know, maybe they'll pair him with Benny Cunningham. I don't know, but they just gives them another option. You can never have enough running backs. On this CBS site I'm on, the Rams actually got an A+. So tremendous draft from them. The worst draft, Carolina Panthers. I talked about them taking Kelvin Benjamin in the first round when they had other options on the board. I don't mind them taking a wide receiver. That was the biggest need that they had, and they had a lot of great players on defense, so I don't have an issue with them taking a wide receiver where they did. It's the receiver they took, and their second-round pick wasn't exactly great either, pass rusher Coney Earl. They took him, looked like for because he was maybe the best player available, looked like they thought he was the best player available, but they had other needs. They didn't pick up an offensive tackle in the draft. And again, I'm going by this writer off of CBS.com, CBSSports.com, Pete Prisco. But he's been covering the NFL for 3 decades, it says in his bio. So I trust his opinion for this. And he gave Carolina the worst grade, a D. So I would use Mel Kiper's grades, but I can't get them because I'm not an ESPN insider. That is so annoying. But anyway, that does it here for the third segment of Monday Morning Huddle. That just about wraps up our show, but I love Huey Lewis so much, I'm going to play another song by him from the album 4, and then we'll come back and I'll say goodbye on this episode of Monday Morning Huddle. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. Your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, I want to hear what you think about the show. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. Send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. And find me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. This is the first time ever I'm doing the show in May. So for the first time on Monday Morning Huddle, I'd like to wish all the mothers out there a happy Mother's Day. I know it was yesterday, but I hope that all you mothers had a wonderful, wonderful day. That does it here on Monday Morning Huddle. We will be back 2 weeks from now. We will not have a show on May 19th, but we will on May 26th. So look out for that coming out in 2 weeks, our next episode. And of course, follow me on Twitter and look out for all of the other great news and stories and articles that come out on Football Nation during the week. But until next time, I'm going to go try and find some peace in my mind.